I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Today on First Lady and Friends, I had a great conversation with Pam Hayes and Jay Francis. They're with an organization called Stand for Kind. They're working in schools and in the communities around the state to take care of our youth by talking about kindness, by talking about anti-bullying, and making sure that our kids have the tools that they need and the words that they need to be able to overcome some of the problems that we're seeing in our schools. I had a great conversation. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. We are here on First Lady and Friends this week. We're so happy to have a couple of friends of mine and really excited about their organization. It's Pam Hayes and Jay Francis with Stand for Kind. So we want to get into Stand for Kind, and we want to learn about your mission and all the things that you're working on and how it fits with what we're doing. We love everything about it, but we want to talk about you, Pam and Jay. Let's go back. We had a great meeting at the mansion a few weeks ago. And just, you know, got to know you and your organization and what's going on. So, but we want to know more about you. So, Pam, we'll start with you. Just talk to me about you. Where'd you grow up? Tell me a little bit about your family, everything that you experienced on your journey growing up.
I'm from California. I moved here a long time ago, like 20 years ago. We've been here for 20 years. Kids are all grown up here and love it.
That's awesome.
What does your husband do?
So he has a marketing and real estate is where he goes.
Okay. Yeah, that's really cool. And your kiddos, where are they at now?
They're all here. So okay. I have one up at the U, and I have an 11-year-old, and my son's working. So
that's amazing. Jay, I know you have a long storied history of here in the state as well, and you've done so many things. But let's talk about the very beginnings.
I was born and raised in Bountiful. Went to Bountiful High School, went to the University of Utah. And it's fun being here in the KSL studios because I cut my teeth on marketing and the ad agency business. And we used to cut lots of radio commercials here and do the audio for TV commercials here. So it's kind of, it's changed a little bit. But I went from the ad agency business to... Sam Battistone was the first owner of the Jazz. He brought them from New Orleans in 1979. And from the ad agency, we were doing some work with him, and he couldn't pay us. Times were really tough. And he said, but I'll give you all the tickets you want. I'll pay your hard costs. So if it cost money to run an ad in the newspaper, he paid that, but he didn't pay it. Us, our agency fee. So we got lots of tickets, but there were lots of tickets to give.
there weren't many people going in those days.
Sam moved, a lot of people won't remember this, but Sam moved 11 of the home games to Las Vegas in 1983, thinking that, okay, we can reduce the number of home games and fans would be more affordable. We'll play 11 of those home games in Las Vegas, and they're all the Western Conference teams, which we see twice anyway. And so he moved a couple of people down there, and he said, Jay, will you be my marketing director and stay here in Utah? So I came at a really opportune time because the agency had just gone through a situation where two clients went bankrupt on us. And so I became the director of marketing for the Utah Jazz in June of 1983. And then Dave Checkitz joined, and in September, there were some other promotions. And so I was with the Utah Jazz since 1983, and we found Larry in April of 1985, and then he bought the second half in 86. So I was with the Jazz for 25 years and then spent 13, 14 years with the Miller corporate office and with Gail Miller in the family philanthropy office. And that's when I became acquainted with Stand for Kind, was some gentlemen that I know, Bob Linnell, who used to work for the state, and Stan Parrish and Matt Christensen and Bob Henry were approached by the then Jazz Bear saying, my daughters are being bullied at school. What can I do? What can I do with my persona? Or what can? And Bob Henry was aware of a program, and they started putting some things together, and they told me, look, we're going to go meet with Gail Miller. And I said, look, there's no budget. You know, don't go meet with Gail Miller. I said, we're meeting with Gail Miller. They came out of there with a check, and they had asked Gail, would she be on their board? And she said, no, but you can have Jay. And so, and that's probably been, you know, like 8 or 9 years ago now. And it's been a great, great opportunity. It was easy. We had a grandson who, if you were to look at him, you would think he was the bully, but just the opposite. He was bullied and teased because his parents went through a separation, and he wore his emotions on the sleeve, so it became easy. And so it was fun for us to get involved and see what we could do, both as a family as well as, you know, just donate our time and help what Pam's doing. So.
It's amazing. Pam, talk to me about, this is, you know, it starts with this idea of how do we, you know, the anti-bullying and how do we get kids, we know that bullying is so damaging and you know, before, you know, in the past, and we, you know, talk about the 80s, that's when I was going to school and growing up and, you know, there was bullying then. But it's kind of risen to a level now that is it's more dangerous. Suicide is more prevalent, and you know, self harm and a lot of the things the kids were dealing with now, cyberbullying, everything's changed. So talk a little bit maybe about, you know, what was the impetus for this and how did you you know, identify this as a need?
I met a family that their son had completed suicide. And the mother came to us and was saying, I wish I would have given him the tools to be able to handle it and to thrive. And it was like an aha moment. We had to create something where we could teach kids empathy and how to overcome bullying and how to look at themselves and have that self-care that they need and the confidence to overcome.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've seen it so much and, you know, we have kids and we've seen it with our kids. And, what do you say to people that, that say that, well, this should be done at home and this shouldn't be, you know, done in public spaces or, you know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, how do you push back on that?
We look at we just want to provide resources. So if their families are teaching them at home, that is fantastic. But some families don't have those resources or those skills. So we want to provide role-playing skills that you can do at home. And then also what we can do in school to teach empathy and kindness. And accept everybody. We all have great strengths. We all need to embrace each other. But we want to provide tools home and at school.
Yeah, Jade, talk a little bit about you know, maybe even more of your experience and how this has come about.
Well, one of the great things that Pam and her team provide is that training in the school. But it's you know, student-led and student-focused. But they're all the kids are hearing the same thing. Not just those who need it or want it, but the bullies are hearing it, those who have been or might be. And so it's everybody's on sort of the same space. And then, you know, as Pam mentioned, it's talked about teaching kindness. The word bullying is not used in their curriculum. It's really about being kind and being accepting. And so it may touch somebody. You know, you can teach it at home.
Yeah.
And we have, and other families do. But when they go out and get it taught as a group, it makes a difference. The other thing is that Pam has an app, and it they track kindness, and so somebody can report acts of kindness, and then they're rewarded for that. You know, because you know, I saw, you know, John pick up Mary's books, or I saw somebody go sit by Mary in the lunchroom, and so that it rewards kindness and acceptance. But there's just so many degrees of this anymore. You know, one of the early ones that I learned was, you know, basically shunning. You know, they didn't have to say a word to a student, but it was organized shunning.
Interesting.
You know,
wow.
Don't sit by Abby. Don't talk to Abby.
Yeah.
And then that alone feeling is just so crushing.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've seen a lot of research on, you know, just what you're talking about, Jay, about the loneliness epidemic. Absolutely. And it's not just kids. In fact, we're as a country lonelier than we have ever been. And yet, you know, we have so many ways to connect. You know, we thought that, you know, I think early on, a lot of us looked at social media when it was just coming about and said, this is such a great way for people to connect. You know, I connected with people in my, you know, from high school that I hadn't seen in years. And, you know, I was able to kind of figure out where they were and, you know, their kids and keep up on things like that. And then we started to see this undercurrent of it wasn't actually helping. So maybe, you know, Pam, what have you seen and how is this helping?
We're seeing a lot of girls come forward saying they're comparing themselves online. And that's really hard. And we don't want to take, I think kids need their phones, their work, you know, if their parents are, they're at a club or something where they have to do gymnastics or football, they want their phone, but do they need the social media portion of it? So we go through and teach the kids, let's look at the positives, and let's, if we see bullying going on, let's report it. And try to limit your time. So we talk to them about, do you need to be on there 70 hours today? Let's see if we can limit that. And it's amazing. We've had a couple of our ambassador groups have taken and tracked how long they've been on it, and none of them realized how long they're actually on Instagram or Snapchat. And so they were kind of coming back, okay, what can I do for positives? And we put it in the students' hands so that they could give us ideas on how they control their social media.
Mm. That's amazing. Well, I want to continue this conversation and keep talking about that and how it's worked in the schools and how you've gotten in there and what the response has been. And we'll do that when we come right back.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're back here on First Lady and Friends. We've got Pam Hayes and Jay Francis with the organization called Stand for Kind. Pam, talk me through how you've gotten into places. I mean, so you're in some schools. Where else are you? And what exactly does it look like? You know, if I'm a principal at an elementary school, what does Stand for Kind do if they came into my school or if I were able to connect with you?
We have different programs available for the school, so we'll look at their needs and see what kind of issues they're having, and then we'll customize the program around the school's needs. So we'll come in and do an assembly, but we really focus with ambassadors, or if they already have clubs going, we can provide curriculum and lessons on kindness, empathy, leadership that the students can use, and they don't have to recreate the wheel with the school. So if they already have things going, we just fit right in and enhance what they're already doing. And that's been key, because schools don't want to have to start all over. They want, and a lot of the programs are out there are working, and they're working great. They may just need a little bit more information or more curriculum that we can add into it to make it really easy for the kids and the teachers. And then we also do parent trainings, and we have a parent toolkit that goes out to the parents on bullying, suicide awareness, empathy, mindfulness, all kinds of different things that they can use. And we have where we come back and we'll work with them quarterly with our ambassador clubs or the clubs that they already have and train the students so that they can go out and train the other students in the school. And it's really important to have that peer-to-peer connection. And we work with the schools on, we do PBIS training, which is positive behavior intervention supports for teachers. So we'll look at the teachers and give them mental health and mindfulness training, plus help them with their classroom management. And that piece has been key for our schools. We're doing some with North San Pi area, we love down there, and Washington County and some other ones up north. So we have districts all over the state that we're in that we use.
Do you find, Jay, do you find that these schools are looking for something to, they obviously are seeing this as a problem. Are you seeing, you know, is this filling that need that schools are looking for? Are they coming to you? How's that working?
Yeah, obviously we have sent out information. We have a waiting list.
Wow.
So, and one of the things, we don't charge the schools, so we're fundraising to be able to provide this. And the legislature has been very generous with us as well, we match what they give plus. And so the fact that, you know, the school doesn't have to take it out of their budget. Mm. They love us. They like Pam's curriculum. We can tell when a school has had an incident because Pam's phone starts ringing. And, that's like being at the bottom of the cliff instead of the top of the cliff, yeah. Unfortunately. So we're out there. We're trying to. One of the things I wanted to mention is that what Pam's team does is it's different for high school than it is for elementary.
Right.
The messaging and the curriculum is differently, and especially in high school with the ambassador clubs or there's Hope Squads out there, that another program which is great, and we just work with them. It's about the kids, not about the program, The training is what's really, really important, and that's Pam was and her team was so on top of it that when the pandemic hit, you would think, well, they were not in school, so they didn't, it wasn't a big deal. Well, it got worse.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But Pam had stuff available online, and so schools could still, send links out to both parents and students so that training and that those helps were still there and still available. And we also go to communities. We've been in city council meetings. We've been to community meetings. So it's not just about schools and students, but it's about a community coming together and helping to recognize that we need to be more kind.
Yeah. Do you have any pushback on your efforts from either the community or parents? Has there been...
We've been very fortunate, and we haven't. And we've had different groups look at our curriculum and our programs, and we've been accepted in the schools and the communities and the parents.
That's fantastic.
We count our blessings. We want everybody
do, because we know there are, but we also kind of stay to the basics. We don't get into some fringe areas, and we know that some organizations have been targeted by other parent groups or whatever. And we're really just trying to tell kids, be nice.
Yeah.
And
why is that so hard? Where's the disconnect between, I just think generally we all want that, but why isn't that happening? Why are we having to teach this directly in schools and stuff? Like where's the breakdown?
I think a lot of it can, you mentioned it earlier, can be traced back to social media. Mm. It's likes. It's how many people are following me. Mm. And just like, news media, and the more sensational it is, the more people who follow. And unfortunately, it lives there, right? Bullying when I was a kid was a bloody nose or you got pantsed or something.
Yeah.
But now kids say something about other kids on social media, it lives. And there's just, it's so prevalent. They take photos of being at prom and make sure they send those photos to someone who didn't get asked to prom.
Wow.
And they didn't say a thing.
Right.
But it really cut, we're just trying to help kids, parents, teachers, counselors, administration, mayors.
Yeah.
And I think that when I stop, I think it really goes back to all of us, right? And things we say in our daily walks of life and at home. If I'm saying something different, or I'm tearing down a neighbor or talking bad about someone, how's that any different than Johnny doing that about Mary at school?
Yeah.
And so we, as a society, we need to be cognizant of those things too.
Yeah, it's you talk about, you know, the behavior that we're modeling at home and the things that you're seeing. What I have found so disheartening as my kids are growing up and as we went through, you know, my kids really were that first group of experiment. And I feel horrible. I mean, we literally experimented on our kids' brains in 2011, 12, 13, 14. That's when we saw this connection between, we can look back now and now that we have all this data and we're seeing that the rates of depression and anxiety, self-harm, suicide went almost exactly hand in hand with the advent of social media and smartphones and yeah. having the social media on our phones and with us every minute, especially with young women. But you know, my kids were right there in that beginning phase, and we didn't know. Honestly, you know, my daughter gets really mad at me because she's 16 and I won't let her have social media because the boys did. But we didn't know
so much more now.
So I just think it's really interesting, and the part that really disheartened me and what made me want to get involved in mental health and helping kids and finding ways to help educators is really that I saw adults on social media, in the news, you know, on cable news, adult leaders, like our nation's leaders, saying the most horrific things about another human and tearing people down and you know, creating this environment where kids are watching adults model the most destructive behavior. And to me, I couldn't, you know, as a kid, I grew up watching the news. My dad, you know, we were very, you know, aware, and my dad mm-hmm. was very aware of, you know, we were always aware of current events and politics and things like that. But that was our duty. It was our duty as a citizen to be a good citizen, to really understand what was going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Where now I feel like I don't want my kids to see this stuff. So, you know, Pam, talk a little bit about how you're seeing that shift and what your specific curricula do to counteract that, what kids are seeing and experiencing.
We have a whole section on cyberbullying, social media, and I think we have to talk about it as parents, yeah. why we don't want them to have social media instead of just saying, you can't have it.
Yeah.
Like, and we have to explain the reasons why, because of what we know. I mean, there's more that I'm sure will be coming out as they do more studies, but we need to explain to them, and we go through that. Some of the reports and the research that they've done, we explain to the kids, this is why it's so important. This is how your brain, it's fed like almost a drug,
yeah.
so that you are picking that up. But I think kids don't realize that. They're like, it's my phone. It's just, you know, I'm looking at my neighbor or my friend and my classmate. So explaining and talking through with the kids why it's so important to monitor that, reduce it, or cut it out altogether. We saw a report where a mom said, if my kids can find a study that social media is good for them, I'll let them have it. Well, it's not out there. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's how they're, but we still have to explain why there's some unknown, but what we know now versus when your kids were starting and they could have it. I mean, I think we all were like, oh, look how smart you are. You're on the social media and it's amazing, but we just got to really monitor it and reduce it as much as possible.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And there are stuff out there that's harmful. I mean, it's on our Stand for Kind page on our Instagram. We have to watch who's liking it because there's pictures out there that show up that are not appropriate. You got to just watch always on Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat. So that's, I think parents don't realize how easy it is to get to kids on predators to get to them and images.
Yeah. Yeah, Jay, I'm sure you've seen this as well.
Well, you know, Pam talked about parents, and you've mentioned parents, and there's a responsibility there. It's interesting. We were just having this discussion kind of around the family table, and my one son, you know, kind of lost it on his child and said, you know, put that phone away. And then we were talking about it, and they said, I just wish the schools would not allow them in school. And I said, don't blame the schools.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of tend to blame the community, right? Well, if the schools wouldn't let them in, well, then they wouldn't have them. Well, yeah, and they have started, which is they found out it's scary, but they have to turn their phones in at night to mm-hmm. their parents.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they know how to, they also know the screen code.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll do some monitoring. And the next morning they said, I won't use her name, but you know, Mary, tell me about this conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was pretty scary yep. about some things that her and some friends were saying about another girl and some pictures that were being shared.
Mm.
And if you're not monitoring it, you can think, you know, everything's fine in Mayberry.
Yep.
But, you know, so parents have a responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's huge.
Yeah. And I think to work in tandem with the school. For me, I mean, I love a good, you know, where, you know, a good team player. If I can be a good team player with the, you know, my kids' school, with their teachers, with their principals, I do think, I think I talk to a lot of teachers that are waiting for somebody to give them permission to, you know, principals or superintendents, you know, giving them permission to say we're just not going to have phones in the school. I think, you know, I think a lot of people love to see that, whether we have the wherewithal to do it. I think we could do it. I don't know why we couldn't, but I think it's possible. But you're exactly yeah. right.
We lived for 3 years in Pittsburgh, you know, on a church assignment. I was still an employee of Larry Miller, but and our son went to high school there just outside of Pittsburgh in Upper St. Clair. And that high school had a cell blocker.
Yeah.
They did not work inside the school, nor did my phone work in the parking lot when I went to pick him up. But
just a little bit problematic.
But it was a little, you know, I know some people will say that, well, that's, you know, that's communistic or whatever, but he wasn't distracted when he was at school.
Well, and also, I mean, the more we learn about what this is doing to our kids' brains, the more research you had, like you talked about, Pam, the more research we have, it's actually equally, if not more destructive than like, you know, the tobacco, and we don't allow that in school. We don't right. allow that to right. young children. And so, you know, we've been looking at this from that angle and saying, like, actually,
that's a great point.
It's not unprecedented that right. we limit access to things that are dangerous to young children. So it's, you know, it's one of those things we're not going to, you know, we used to smoke on planes and that was really dumb and we were all getting lung cancer. So, like, you know, there's things that we can look back at and think it wasn't a great idea. And when you know better, you do better. So I think it's a big part of it. I want to continue this conversation and talk about what's next for Stanford Kind. And we'll do that when we come right back. We're back here on First Lady and Friends with Pam Hayes and Jay Francis with Stand for Kind. I don't think we can have too many organizations working on this together. And I know we have a few in the state and we have a few that are working on this issue, but I don't think that we can have too many. I think this is such a big issue. We've talked a lot about social media, and we were talking in the break about social media and the dangers and the things that we're seeing. I check my daughter's phone almost nightly. She plugs it in the kitchen. If she doesn't, she knows she may not have access to it the next day. So that's, you know, we've been pretty stern about that. We always have with our kids. It's always been, we never have them in the bedrooms, and then we've been trying to limit access in a lot of other ways, but it's hard. It's really hard for kids, and it's hard for adults. I tell you, I think we like to blame this on kids, and of course their brains are developing, so it is more dangerous, but I think there's equally as many adults addicted to social media as children right now. And again, like we said, modeling terrible behavior and speaking unkind to each other, treating each other with contempt if you don't agree with them. I mean, it's a huge problem. So let's talk about where you are right now with Stand for Kind, your organization. How many schools are you in, and what's the plan going forward? Is it schools? Is it, you know, you talked about you're in cities and you know, with mayors and that, but what's the long-term plan? How do we spread this even more?
We're in around 300 schools annually. We do between 300 and 400 schools each year.
And when you
year.
Say we go into, we do a school, what does that mean exactly?
It's one or more of our programs.
Okay.
So it could be teacher training, student training, parent training. We also have a behavioral threat assessment training that we're offering now that we have a grant available where we'll train the staff on what to do for an active shooter. So we want to prevent it. And
yes.
So the training we use is preventative. Our staff teaching and training, we come in and we help them with the positive behaviors, classroom management.
So is this to individual? Do you go into the classroom with, like, you're training individual teachers? Is this a, you train the teachers together?
We'll train, depending on the district, we train teams that will go back in and train the full staff for their district. Or we have one-off schools that will just come in and work with the individual teachers and principals and admins.
Okay.
So we break it up. But we really want to customize it based on the needs of the schools statewide.
What are, so when you say the needs of the school, so when they call you, it's because they've had an incident like what?
We got a call from a district last week saying that words hurt and they're having a lot of students making fun of special needs children or racial comments. And he goes, I need help. I need something that we can show these kids that words hurt and they matter and gestures matter. So we've designed a whole program to come in. We're starting in August with this one district on how your words hurt and how everybody empathy and how we all have talents and traits. So we're putting a program based on the issues that they're having, that they're seeing in their school and district.
Mm. So what kind of, I mean, I'm assuming you're keeping data to show how your program's working. I come from a special ed background. We always have to keep data.
You have to have data.
So,
and we help the schools. We were just in Washington County. We're pulling their data, looking at different things because we're going to be doing PBIS with them and different trainings. So we look, when we go to a school, we'll look at office referrals, the classrooms and the teachers, where they're coming from, the referrals. And their special needs kids, where they are 504s, if do they need extra help? Where do we see if there's any disconnect there too? So we look at all the data and we run it quarterly, and we have those reports to say, okay, it's working here. We've seen a decrease in bullying incidents. We've seen a decrease in office referrals,
okay,
and suspensions. So.
Yeah, that's incredible. Again, you gotta track this stuff to see
you know
what's working and what's not. Are there any other type programs that you're seeing working as well in these schools? Are you seeing? I mean, for me, it's like, okay, if you're having a problem with kids with disabilities and then making fun, like, we got to get Unified Sports in there, right?
Right. And so, Dusted and Unified Sports, we need them at E4A combined, everybody together, and we look at it that way. It takes a village. So all the nonprofits out there, or programs that are out there, we want to combine it and just give the schools everything they can. Then just bring it on, because so that they can take care of those issues.
What do you say to people? Because I get this a lot. What do you say to people that say, this is taking, you know, too much time in our schools, we need to focus on academics? How do you counteract sort of that argument or that message?
If a student doesn't feel safe going to school, they're never going to succeed academically. Yeah. So it goes hand in hand. Behavior should actually be taught first, before they learn their 1-2-3s.
I agree.
I mean, it used to be you'd fake a stomach ache, right, not to go to school. But, you know, if kids, I don't want to face those girls anymore. I don't want to face that kid. And so they'll ditch class, or they'll stay home. And too many of them, you know, are come from, you know, one-parent homes. Yeah. And some of the parent has gone to work, and so it really affects everything about their whole school opportunities. If they don't feel safe, if they don't feel welcomed, if they don't feel included.
Yeah. What do you say that to people that push back? Again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but what do you say? Because it's all the things I hear.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you say to people that we need to teach kids resilience? How do we teach resilience as it relates to some of the stuff that we've been talking about? I know that, you know, we have to be kind. We have to. How do we teach kids to be resilient through maybe some of these struggles that they're having?
We work with the schools. So we have a program called Protect Your Pack for our elementary kids.
Mm-hmm.
And And we teach them that they have to look out for each other. We're a family. So they learn how to step up for the student that may be sitting by themselves at lunch or isn't playing with anybody at school. So we go through and teach them, but we model and we show stories. And we talk about different people that have gone through it and where they're at now. But we really want to start with our elementary kids on the resiliency and kindness and then move on to our teen, middle, and high schools. But we have our LIFT program for our high schools where it's Lift Your Fellow Teen. We train the students. We have lessons on resiliency. We have different speakers that come in with different stories. But we have activities that they can do throughout the year to really build their community and their culture.
Mm, I love that.
Yeah, and I think resilience is different today than, you know, what I mean.
What is that definition? Sometimes we use these words and maybe we're not always working from the same definitions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a father just saying, oh, just buck up. Yeah. Just, you know, punch him in the nose. Or, well, it's different. And resilience comes through maybe teaching that individual how to be more kind themselves. Mm-hmm. And they experience it. And so when maybe they get a negative comment, they know how to feel a little bit different. But it's, you know, it's the old school, just buck up.
Yeah, and I think we get in trouble a little bit with that. Sometimes, you know, some of us that kind of grew up in that way of thinking, and we had parents that said, you know, you'll be fine. I mean, honestly, it wasn't all that healthy in a lot of ways.
It wasn't.
Well, and you have to, you know, I got some training, you know, through some leadership with the LDS Church, you know, and unfortunately I had to conduct a couple of funerals with suicides. Mm. And you have to be very, very careful because you say too many kind things. I mean, you say kind things.
Yeah.
But there are others that are sitting there saying, this is how I can get someone to say something nice about me.
Yeah.
And so you have to be very, very careful because They're looking for somebody to say nice things. We all do.
Yes.
We want those connections.
You know, if Gail Miller, when I was working for her, said something positive and said, thanks, Jay, you know, I floated home.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, and we all want that.
Yeah.
And I see it, you know, in working with, and now I work with the Chamber of Commerce, and I see small businesses, they're just looking for a little recognition, even in the business world.
Yeah.
And we're all looking for that. So if we get that, that's how we can build resilience.
Yeah.
It's just a little positive comment.
A little confidence.
A little mint under the pillow, right? I mean, and just the opposite just tears them down. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've started our ambassador club, and we call it our state club because a lot of schools, you can't be on clubs if your grades are down or your attendance is down. Mm-hmm. And those are the kids that need that connection the most. So schools can send students to us that may be struggling in academically or their attendance, and they can join our ambassador club, get the training. And we've seen 100% of those kids come back with their grades up and in school, and they're leading. And then they do clubs in their own school because they want to keep the things going. And we do summer camps. But we want to open it up and give every child a connection.
Amazing.
So they have those friends. It's important that we have each other's back. So.
It's very important. I mean, I'm asking these questions and kind of pushing back, but just really, I believe in your mission. You know, obviously at Show Up, we're trying so hard to also push this message out of just,
you know,
kindness, compassion. I mean, we've got to teach our children to be compassionate, to be willing to stand up for those that need us, and it's a big deal. And you grow up in this world, and to be a human as an employee or a business owner that is kind and compassionate, and to be that way with your employees. I mean, we want this society, our society, this next generation to be better than we were, and they are. They're so much better than we were. I just think they've got it. They have it in their DNA to be that kind of compassionate person.
Very much so.
And we're talking mental health now. I mean, we didn't before. And so it's so great that kids know coping skills.
Yes.
And they know how to, I'm having a panic attack, or this is anxiety and this is how we deal with it. Or if a friend's having a panic attack, they know how to jump in and help.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the more we talk about it, the better it is. Mm-hmm. So We're so grateful to you and for, you know, Jay and Pam for being here, for the work that you're doing. It matters. It really matters. And we're saving lives. You guys are saving lives every day. So we appreciate that. And we're all in this together. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. To learn more, you can go to standforkind.com. Thanks for being a friend.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.